Welcome in to the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno. And if that wasn't enough, we also welcome to the programme Frank Leboeuf, Jan Arge Fjortoff and Craig Burley here as we reflect on that game at Stamford Bridge in the Champions League quarter-final first leg. And what a match it was between Chelsea and Real Madrid. Real Madrid would quickly take a 2-0 lead after a couple of fantastic finishes from Karim Benzema. Kai Havertz would score just before the break. And then 60 seconds into the second half, a mix-up at the back between Mendy and Rudiger would see Karim Benzema score into an empty net. And that would be it. Real Madrid taking a 3-1 lead into that second leg in Spain next week. Start with you, Craig. What a great game this was.
Well, compared to yesterday, I suppose. But, Real Madrid were exceptional. Obviously, Benzema was exceptional. That the goals that he took, he could have had four, really, when he missed that easy chance, probably the easiest chance he had in the first half. But I just thought the way they controlled the game, once they got over the edgy start, Casemiro, I thought, was brilliant. Modric, unbelievable 36-year-old. And I thought Valverde in that decision to play him was excellent. He worked that whole right-hand side. And on the other side, Vinicius Junior took more chances, cheated a little bit, really put pressure on Christensen. And I think that's why Thomas Tuchel had to make a change at half-time in terms of the shape, because Real Madrid were controlling the game. So, yeah, a first-class performance.
What's interesting, obviously, we've seen a lot of Real Madrid this season, Ali, in the sense that they were terrible against Barcelona, not much better against Celta Vigo. Yep. But when it comes to the Champions League, they just seem to find that next level. That first half was the best we've seen from Real Madrid, arguably, all season.
And the way that they were able to absorb pressure while Chelsea was getting numbers or trying to get numbers around the ball, and the calmness and confidence to be able to play through that pressure. And once they play through that pressure, they are transitioning forward. And when they're able to do that with time and space, they're just about better than anybody else in the world in that transition, because they find that first pass out of pressure, connect that first pass, and now you get Benzema involved. Now you get Vinicius involved, and Christensen is still trying to chase Vinicius Jr. He can't quite figure out, do I get tied to him? Do I wait for him? He was able, Vinicius Jr., to then get in the head of Christensen, and because of that, he got tied to him, and by the time he got tied to him, Benzema was the one laying the ball off. And while we want to focus on the goals by Karim Benzema, and rightfully so, there were a few plays in the first half that had nothing to do with goals, in which he freed up other players that tell you everything that you need to know about Karim Benzema as a player. The little back heel that he does in the first action in the attack from Real Madrid that ends up being the post from Vinicius Jr., it tells you the vision, the movement, how smart and how intelligent he is, and how he knows what's around him. And being able to isolate Benzema, being able to isolate Vinicius Jr., Real Madrid had to control the pace of the game. And even though they didn't have the ball, when they did have it, unlike Atletico Madrid yesterday, they show an ability and they showed ambition in saying, okay, this is our moment. We know this is our moment. We recognize it. Now let's go on the attack. Let's go on transition. Let's punish Chelsea. And they did that very well.
How good were those finishes, Jan, from Benzema?
It's unbelievable. I nearly start crying when I saw that second goal. but this heading that he's doing, for me, that is Leonardo da Vinci meeting Michelangelo somewhere and find out, what do we do with a cross when a ball is coming like this? How do we do that? How do you use your head? He's using his heading better than most players in the Champions League can shoot. I mean, Benzema, what he did today, and I agree with Al, there were so many small things that he did this game. He's so intelligent, and it's not like we haven't seen that. There are some people who say he hasn't been good. He's been always been a good, great player. I mean, he's won everything. And you just, what was that? But it's someone applauding for me there. But it's like unbelievable. You just feel that this team, they played together since Puskas and Di Stefano played together. You just feel that. And when you see Benzema with this enjoyment he's doing that, with just doing a hat-trick for the second Champions League in a row, nobody has done that. It's three other players who have done that all in the whole history of Champions League. And he just do it naturally. Fantastic. I mean, we see a lot of football games, and I kind of love these kind of moments, because then it's all sitting through so many bad football games and so many bad finishing, and then Benzema does this. Fantastic. Fantastic.
And we talked about this before, Craig, how obviously when Cristiano Ronaldo left, we thought maybe it would be Bale who would step up and kind of take his place. But Benzema has come in and done that and it just exceeded all expectation.
Who thought Bale would take his place?
Well, that was the theory, wasn't it? That was what the talk was.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but he's just got better and better. And I suppose as everybody talks about Lewandowski, and rightly so, you know, the amount of goals he scored, just his general play. When Real Madrid haven't been, they're having some success and they're top of the league, and it's been a little bit of a struggle at times. And if you watch La Liga, it's not always been convincing, but they've been getting results. He really has carried the team. Now, he had a little spell out injured, and they tried everything and sundry to replace him. They tried a Falcao 9, they tried Isco, they tried Jovic, they tried Belfort, they tried everything. Just irreplaceable at this team at the moment. And as the guys have alluded to, it's the work rate, it's the positioning that he takes up. I can't remember the goals again. Was the first one the header from about 16 yards? Because that was...
Yeah.
That was just... I mean, the whole build-up play, coming short, putting it in behind, then busting a gut to get in there and then the finish. And then the second one, I think the one Jan was talking about, I don't know, I can't remember, when he was leaning back and just sort of guiding it in the first half. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And, of course, he should have had that other one in the first half. That's a little blemish on his card. But no, I mean, should we be surprised? We talked about it yesterday briefly. Chelsea were the bookies' favourites. I struggled to see why that was. Yeah, Real Madrid haven't been playing brilliantly, but they've got 7 victories in the last 8 games. That one defeat was the bludgeoning by Barcelona, I'll give you that. But then you look at Chelsea, 4 goals they lost to Brentford at home, and people say, well, yeah, but they've been defending great lately. Look at who they've played. Lille in the Champions League twice, Middlesbrough, they've played Burnley, they've played Newcastle, they've played Norwich. All teams that are really struggling. Crystal Palace, who are not bad, but been in the bottom half. So they've been playing teams, Dan, Chelsea, that have been either fighting relegation or in the bottom half of the league. That's not really a good gauge in terms of where they are. Let's not forget, Chelsea have been out of the title race in England since around Christmas time. There are problems there, notwithstanding the sanctions and all that. But that's not an excuse. Because Chelsea's season was derailing, certainly domestically, before that. And this is a real eye-opener for Thomas Tuchel about what they need and just where they are. Even though they're the holders of this competition, just where they are at the moment with the other big sides when they turn it on.
Frank, what's disappointing from a Chelsea perspective, obviously, is that Kai Havertz goal just before the break kind of gave them a lifeline where they didn't really deserve one considering how good Real Madrid in the first half. So you thought you're looking to keep that momentum going. And then Mendy to Rudiger and then Benzema, of course, pouncing on it. When you see this goal time and time again, you look at Rudiger, surely as a centre-back, and think, what are you doing?
Well, you can wonder the same for Edouard Mendy. You know, lately, so many bad passes were created dangers for his own team. And it's true, Rudiger has to... I think it would have been Carvajal or Nacho or maybe Milito. It would have kicked the ball in the stand to clear and to secure what we... to secure the chance for Real Madrid. The thing is, when you started the show with, I don't know, what a great game it was. Well, it was a great game for Real Madrid. It was an awful game from Chelsea, really. And I still don't know if Chelsea was so bad because Real Madrid was so good, or Real Madrid was so good because Chelsea was so bad. We saw everything. The lineup was wrong. I think Azpilicueta playing on the left side to cope with Valverde, that was a very bad decision from Tuchel. Bad performance overall, the commitment weren't there for a quarterfinal of the Champions League, and the clumsiness. When you have Lukaku, you know, with his lack of confidence, missing his header at 3-1, I mean, that's awful. Everything was wrong. Everything was wrong from Chelsea, even if they had chances the last 20 minutes. You cannot think that this team deserved to go through with that kind of performance. So there is a second tie. We want to, of course, if you support Chelsea, you want to see something much better. But in every compartment, every line from the goalkeeper to the strikers, except maybe Havertz, we did what he had to do. Everybody has to show us much more if they want to create maybe a miracle.
What was Rudiger doing for that third goal, Cray?
What happened?
What do I think?
Well, I think we lost quite a bit. Jan?
I think Dan, what was quite interesting was Rudiger got a yellow card quite early. And we were doing this game when we were watching it, and I was saying that if Rudiger against Real Madrid get a yellow so early, he seemed a bit confused the rest of the game. And that thing that he did there, as Frank's saying, you just get a ball away. It looks like it wasn't a typical Rudiger going into that, being maybe afraid of getting the red card. But Benzema as well is just taking advantage of it straight away, and he had to win that duel against Rudiger. But of course, that was a bad defending, but it's interesting what Frank is saying, because Real Madrid just show how much culture's making. You know, okay, Chelsea were not playing at their best, but when you see that culture of winning, when the goings get tough, Real Madrid was always there, and that is hard to learn. That is hard to learn to have the players like Kroos and Modric and Benzema done it so many times before. So it's very fascinating to look at.
As Craig mentioned before, Frank, you look at it and maybe this is a surprise on paper for you, but you look at the form that Chelsea had going into this tie, it maybe isn't such a surprise, despite the fact that what you said when this draw made, you would say that Chelsea would demolish Real Madrid.
Yeah, because what I saw from Real Madrid wasn't convincing from me. Even if, and Craig mentioned it, Chelsea conceded many goals against Brentford in fantastic games. But when you compare the two sides, you know, you can have, you know, a slight optimism toward that game and think that Chelsea can do the job. But tonight, there were such differences of class and level between the two teams. And I remind everybody, Chelsea was playing at home. That's a clear nightmare. So you can say it's an accident, but it was an accident like a few days ago against Brentford. So it's an accident against Real Madrid. Well, you know, when you have too many accidents, it becomes an habit, and you have to make sure, you know, you get into you get out of trouble very quickly, because that could be an awful end of the season if they carry on like that.
Can I just say, and I'll just go back to Frank there for a second. And when PSG lost to Real Madrid, Frank came on and said, well, it wasn't Real Madrid that won it, it was PSG that lost it. Now you ask Frank about the good performance of Real Madrid away from home. He just said it, away from home. And his response is, well, was Real Madrid really that good, or were Chelsea really that bad? Maybe a combination of both, but at some point we have to address the fact that Real Madrid were excellent in the first half. And you mentioned, you alluded to it, their passing under pressure, whenever Chelsea, early part of the game, they were trying to get on top of Real Madrid, and they were able to withstand that pressure through passing the ball, not through kicking, not through fouling, not through just kicking the ball anywhere, no. Through patterns, through quality, through the names that Jan just mentioned, through Modric and Kroos and Casemiro, and then they found the transition. So while, yes, the pressure for Chelsea was not all that great, it wasn't together, and you can work on that if you're Chelsea and you're Tuchel, and you must work on that if indeed you're going to pressure a team like Real Madrid, fine, I'll accept that. But you have to have a team that is willing to work through that pressure and pass through that pressure, and we saw that from Real Madrid in a way that we haven't seen with any sort of consistency throughout the course of the season in La Liga. Today, they were very good in the first half because of the quality of the players on the field. And you saw it through the midfield, and you saw it in the front line as well.
The good news is, Dan, I don't know what happened earlier. I don't think my internet cut out. I think I just surprised you. But the good news is for Chelsea fans that their manager has chucked the towel in. He chucked the towel and he was asked in his press conference, is there a chance to come back in the second leg? And he said no. So he sat and he's still in the corner of the ring blubbering to himself. It's not exactly the message you want. And there'll be people out there that will say, well, this is tactics, this is psychology. I don't think it's completely dead and buried. I think it's unlikely. I don't think it's impossible, but I certainly don't think you should be sitting there as a manager in a press conference with a two-goal deficit. Bearing in mind, there's no away goals rule anymore. So those three goals are not worth as much as they were. I don't think you should be sitting in a press conference saying, is there a chance in the second leg? No. That's just not a very good signal to be sending out after a poor performance and after being outplayed. They've thrown the towel in already in the domestic title race, pretty much. And I don't really think you want to hear that from a manager. You want to hear something with a bit more fight and spirit, something that you're going to take to the Bernabeu and start saying, well, if we get an early goal, you never know. You just never know. So I didn't like that from him in the press conference, and he wasn't misquoted. He basically said, we're out of this tie. And I don't think that's a very positive message to be sending out, to be quite frank.
Yeah, and you're a big Tuchel fan.
Absolutely, and then we have to look at it human. I haven't seen the press conference, but I have to believe he said that. I saw after the game, he said, if we play like this, like in the first time, we'll get hammered at the Santiago Bernabeu. I think that we, if you, not an explanation for what he's been under pressure with the situation at Chelsea, and we've all been complimented to him, how praised him, how he's handled that situation. This week, it was also out with the divorce and everything, Craig. So I tried to see it on a human side, but if he said that, it's not good for his players. But I agree with Craig. You can go there, you have, with Havertz, you have players with Mount and everybody that can score goals. But I think that they were seen through today, a bit like Ali saying. I think there was a class difference between the two teams, and someone mentioned that header from Lukaku, and when you saw the headings, headers from Benzema, you saw the heading from Lukaku. I mean, Benzema must cost £1 billion net a year when you see the different quality in the finishing.
Let's
just go back to this. Let's go back to Thomas Tuchel briefly. Not suggesting he's a bad manager, not at all. He's got clearly a good CV. But the mask has slipped a little bit here, and it has in recent months. Now, let's take the sanctions and that out of the equation. Things were unravelling at Chelsea well before that. Jan, and I don't know if I misheard Jan there, but talking about the difference in class between the two teams. There shouldn't be.
No, it was today. Like, that's what I said.
Sorry?
It was today. Now, I said, Craig, it was today. I'm not saying that there's a big difference between the squads.
Right.
They are the reigning champion of Europe, of the world. But today, there was a different class. I'm not saying that they only were bad. Today, Real Madrid played a very good game.
Yeah, but my point being is there shouldn't be. I mean, all this champions of Europe, I keep going back to this. You know, yeah, he was successful last year. So was Roberto Di Matteo when he came in. Holy Christ, Avram Grant nearly won the Champions League as the Chelsea interim manager, whatever it was. Can you only imagine? There shouldn't be this gulf between Chelsea and Liverpool and City and Chelsea and Real Madrid. Not with what they're spending and what they have spent. Not with that squad. So a lot of this goes on Thomas Tuchel. Why couldn't you put a credible challenge to the top two in England? Why, at the moment, are you not facing off with a Real Madrid side, a top of La Liga, but boy, did they have their problems in the summer. And boy, have they been really average in a lot of La Liga games this year. Today, they were excellent. But why are Chelsea, with the billions spent and the big transfer budget in the summer, once again, so far off the pace? The manager does not come out unscathed in all this. Yeah, he has some money in the bank from that Champions League win, and that was a big surprise, particularly against City, who stuffed it up, it has to be said, with team selection. But over the course of 38 games, and over the course of this Champions League now, this is the first real proper team, I believe, if memory serves me right, that they have met and they've been taken apart. So for me, we can look at the players, of course, we can look at the problems, but we have to look at Thomas Tuchel and say, should you be getting more with this expensively assembled Chelsea squad? The answer is yes. And I might be a bit ill-timed if they come back and win in the Bernabeu. We'll see. Unlikely. But I don't think he comes out of this unscathed, even with all the problems that Chelsea are having at the moment, because this was long in the making before any sanctions were on the table.
Frank, do you agree with Craig? Tuchel's got to go?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I think, as he said, and I guess he didn't say that, as he said, there is a possibility for Chelsea to get through if there is a kind of a miracle and maybe Tuchel find the solution. But there are some question marks. I never thought that Chelsea would be what was as good as Liverpool and Manchester City. That I agree with Craig. In out of 38 games of the season, they can't follow the rhythm of the two other teams. They are a very good team, better than some others. But he has to find a solution, and he couldn't. He didn't find a solution, and he's been the second year at front, for example. He has some issues with N'Golo Kanté, who has been injured many, many times this season. And at the back, it was good last season. It's not anymore. And we saw that on the second goal between Christensen and Thiago Silva, the misunderstanding between the two, even if we have to emphasize the fact that Benzema is an incredible player and can find any spaces in against anybody. But there are some issues that they have to resolve. And very quickly, as I said before, because it can be very disappointing end of the season. Let's go back to what Ali said before. I agree with you. I'm very surprised the way Real Madrid played today. I'm very happily surprised with the way they played today. But according to what I saw lately, I couldn't say that Real Madrid was a fantastic team after what I saw for a game and a half against Paris Saint-Germain, and I saw against Celta Vigo, what I saw against Barcelona. But today, they were excellent.
But Dan, if I can say that with Chelsea, because they were my favorite to win the Premier League. I think I follow Craig is what he's saying, because Chelsea with that squad should be up there competing with Liverpool and Manchester City, and they're not even close. So absolutely, Thomas Tuchel this season hasn't got enough out of his team. He got the striker he needed. He didn't have that kind of player. He got Lukaku from Italy, who was scoring goals for fun there. He hasn't turned up more or less whole season for him. Mendy starts getting insecure. Rudiger improved when Tuchel came to him. They look a bit more vulnerable at the back. So although I'm a big fan of Thomas Tuchel, I think he's a great manager. But this year, he hasn't got enough out of that Chelsea squad. That is 100% true.
And that's epitomised by Lukaku, surely, Craig. Just came on, as Jan said, had a couple of really proper chances that he just completely fluffed.
Yeah, he's gone, hasn't he? I mean, he's just gone. I don't think he wants to be here. He gave that horrendous interview, badly ill-timed, apart from the wording of it. We can argue, and we did do, and debate about how it was handled, and I still don't think it was handled brilliantly internally. I'm not suggesting for a minute that he did the right thing. I don't think it was, but I think there was already a fire burning, and Tuchel and the club just got a big bunch of gasoline and threw it all over it. And none of them have ever recuperated from that or recovered from that, really. And certainly, we don't know what's going to happen with Chelsea. I think, you know, even if Abramovich was still there, I think Tuchel had another full year in him without any silverware this year. Then he might have been in bigger problems had the scenario been the same this time next year. Obviously, we have no idea what way the takeover and the ownership is going to look like, so we don't know. But I think what we do know with Tuchel there and with the way Lukaku's playing, he's toast. I mean, there's just no point. They might as well try and get what they can from him, ship him off back to Italy or whatever it is, where he wants to be happy, where he knows he can score goals. It just hasn't worked for him, and he just doesn't look like a player that A, wants to be there. And I think B, in his own mind, I think he has a phobia about his own ability and the people that ask him questions of him to score in the Premier League. And I think that, to me, looking at him, he looks like a player who plays thinking people think that he only scores goals in other leagues and he can't do it in England. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. That's what it looks like to me. A player who has the burden of analysts who go, yeah, sod off somewhere else and score goals because you can't really do it here on the big stage. And I don't think he ever really will consistently in England.
What's even worse about Lukaku today is in the context of Karim Benzema doing what he's doing on the other side of the field.
Yeah.
Because if you're a Chelsea fan, you look at that and you go, well, that's world class over there. This is not. And it is a contrast that is so clear to see. Two headers for Benzema, two goals. Two headers for Lukaku, two missed opportunities. How may the result be different if Lukaku is able to put a chance away? We'll never know. But clearly, if you're a Chelsea fan, you sit back and you watch that and you go, yeah, this is not the guy. Wish we had that guy. We don't need this guy around here.
Frank, percentage chance. Go on.
No, on the other side of the coin, and this is, you know, to Benzema's credit. Now, you know this because you've been in Madrid, you've worked in Madrid. There'll be some out there that say, you know, and this is a big boys game here. You take the pressure, good performances, bad performances, criticism, praise, whatever it is. That's part of the gig. Wherever you're playing, you've got to handle that, right? So he has to accept interviews, loss of form, on the bench, not the style of play doesn't suit me, all these excuses. That's part of it. You've got to handle it. Go back to Benzema. You know this for a fact. It has really, if ever, all been a bed of roses for Karim Benzema at Real Madrid. He's had bad games, he's had injuries, he's had the boo boys on him, he's had, he's had a lot of problems that he's had to handle. Notwithstanding the 5-year issues that he had with France that were hovering over him, not blaming anybody here about who was guilty and who wasn't, but these things all were hanging over him, even if he brought them on himself, but he still had to go out and perform. So it's not as if Karim Benzema has had an easy ride and here it is on a plate for you, Real Madrid, easy to score goals. He's had to face the adversity as well, but his character is so strong, he's come through and he's carried that team. That is one of the main places that Romelu Lukaku, certainly in this spell in England, has struggled. When the pressure has been really, really on, he's not been able to come through. And the great players like Benzema, even when the knives are out, still manage to come up trumps.
His goal made Jan cry, Frank cry for other reasons. Frank, with your bad Chelsea mood, percentage chance of your boys going through?
Well, it's going to be hard. And if they play the same way that they played against Brentford or Real Madrid, that's going to be possible, you know. But if they play like they played the League Cup final, the Carabao Cup against Liverpool, yeah, it's possible. So I don't know what kind of face are we going to see from Chelsea. Let's say if they don't believe they can change and win, they shouldn't go to Madrid. So if they decide to go, it's because they have a little bit of belief on returning the tie and maybe go through.
Where's a number in all of that?
None. Zero. Zero numbers.
That's John Hutchinson's department.
Go on. What percentage chance, Frank?
20%.
Whoa, that's good.
Because, you know, the away goal doesn't count anymore. So you score one goal, you put trouble in Real Madrid players' head, and you can score a second one, and you go to extra time. So, yeah, you know, that's possible. 20%.
Frank's in a bad mood. Yeah, Frank's going to be back a little later. Well, maybe read your book, Frank, in the meantime. Cheer yourself up a little bit. Meanwhile, the big story...
I'm okay.
You don't seem it. Make Craig look happy. off the pitch, the big story, of course, breaking regarding Manchester United. Sources close to ESPN suggesting that Ten Hag will be the new manager. This is what Mark Hogan had to say about the situation.
Pochettino's kind of star has waned a little bit in recent times. And I think Ten Hag has emerged as a guy that's got all the credentials. And obviously, if we're talking money, is a much cheaper option to get out of Ajax than Pochettino out of PSG. So, football reasons and financial reasons, but I'm told that football as much, if not more, than financial reasons.
Julian Laurent has replaced Frank. Before we go to Jules, Craig, does this make sense? We haven't really had a chance to talk to you about this whole situation. Ten Hag taking over?
Do you know, I was thinking about it and I struggle to see... convince myself what manager's going to work at Man United at the moment. They've tried so many. The recruitment has been so bad. The attitude of a lot of players has been horrendous. The form of a lot of players has been horrendous. The camaraderie at that club, whether they agree or not, has been poor. So unless you were giving me Guardiola or Klopp at the moment, I think I struggle to convince myself who just is the right man. I think there's no doubt Ten Hag has got a great CV in Holland with Ajax. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt he knows his stuff. There's also not a doubt that although it's been problematic recently, what Pochettino did at Tottenham, if you look at where they were before and where they are now, was actually quite amazing. But I would hate to think it's just they've chosen Ten Hag over Pochettino because there's a few extra million here or there. Bearing in mind how many millions they've thrown away in the last 5 or 6 years. So I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think it's a better appointment than certainly they've made in recent years. But I find it hard to convince myself that who is the man that's going to turn this ship around, because there are just so many problems at that club.
Yeah.
What happened to Pochettino, Jules?
That's a really good question. I think that's one of the questions that comes with the Ten Hag move to United, of course, is that I think both Pochettino and PSG really saw the United's position as, well, the right ending. You know, you can go there, we get a bit of money, and then we can go and get Zinedine Zidane or someone else or whoever, because clearly they don't really want Pochettino there next season, even if he still has 1 year left on his contract. The problem is, if there's not any more the United option, then you might have to keep him, even if that's not really what you want. It is going to be one that the PSG hierarchy will have to decide on. You can still get rid of him, of course, and pay him off the last year of his contract and then go and get someone else. But that's not really what they had in mind. They really thought that United would come for him. So this is going to make Pochettino's future more uncertain, for sure, and certainly more difficult to sort out. But United went for who they thought was the best choice.
What do you think of this, Jan?
Well, I think I agree with the boys in terms of Manchester United got so many problems. And if you think that one man can change that, then you have to have the best. They had a chance to get Tuchel. They had a chance to get Conte. Then, of course, they had to fire my man, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But still, they had a chance. And there is no way that one manager can solve this. And it's quite interesting to see the Manchester United fans, if they are completely honest, they didn't know who Ten Hag was. They had to Google him for the last 2 or 3 months. And if we're saying that it was the best thing he has done in Holland, yes, there is a lot of managers who can win in Holland, but this was the guy who was available. If they said that Pochettino was the alternative, maybe that was more difficult. But I can't believe that Manchester United, one of the biggest brands in the world, one of the most loaded clubs in the world, should choose Ten Hag because it was a cheap solution. There must be someone thinking that this was the best solution for the club. And just if I may add, Dan, they put in Ralf Rangnick to kind of help them to build a club because he was a club builder and so on. You can agree or disagree if that was a good idea, but it seems that he's put 100% on the sideline. So Manchester United just keep on driving like a ship, like going forward, back, and they will keep doing that. And Ten Hag got an unbelievable job ahead of him. First of all, is to try to close the windows in the dressing room, because it seems they have vote for everything that Manchester United are going to do. And maybe Mark, who has got so good sources at Manchester United, soon we will have the votes. It was 20-1 decision and 5-1. I mean, that is so embarrassing that a big club like Manchester United they need to solve.
Last word on this to you, Craig.
Again, it's just the unknown. I hope it works out for him, because I think, you know, it'd be good to see Man United back competing again. But it's a long way off. I think they're probably going to lose Pogba again on a free transfer for the second time. That's we're talking about bad business. Just bad business after bad business after bad business. It's recruitment, it's football structure at the club, and it's how much power the likes of Ten Hag will have over the financial executives at that football club and ownership. A huge job, particularly when you look at where Liverpool and Manchester City are. So if it is Ten Hag, we wish him well. But boy, I struggle to see how he's going to turn this ship around in anything but maybe, you know, 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years. It's going to take a while.
Craig, in your salmon hoodie, thank you very much. We'll let you go. For more on this story, be sure to go to ESPN FC. Mark Ogden breaking it down as to why it looks like it will be Ten Hag taking charge of Manchester United next season. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, there was another Champions League game and a surprise at that as well. Villarreal winning by 1-0 against Bayern Munich. Jan and Jules with us. Jan, I thought the interesting thing about this game was the fact that Dani Parejo, the Villarreal attacker after the match, said that, yeah, we're happy that we won. We're disappointed. It wasn't more, though.
And absolutely, he's right. Gerard Moreno had, in the second half, he had three chances on the spot. I mean, this was, Bayern didn't turn up. In first half, it was unbelievable. I mean, Lewandowski and Müller, I didn't think they were at the game. I mean, I've never seen that before. And Emery had set them up well defensively in a 4-4-2. They were very loyal to their system. And you expected Dan Bayern in the second half coming out, have a go at them. I think they created 1.5 chances. And the whole chances was a shot that Torres managed to skip away. And Villarreal, full respect to them. There was passion in there. There were the will to run, the will to stay and follow Emery's tactic. And funny enough, I mean, just shows you there's a historical win for them because Bayern Munich haven't lost away from home in the Champions League since 2017. And the coach at PSG was Emery. So, I mean, he will, but I still think that Bayern will have a chance, of course, at home against them. But remember, and we have to remind people that Villarreal won 3-0 at Juventus, so they will have confidence going in there. So, yes, I have to agree with Villarreal, be happy to have won 1-0, but I should have probably won 2 or 3.
But anyone who saw the round before, Jules, away against Salzburg, wouldn't be surprised by this performance. It's another poor away day for Bayern Munich. And as much as they turned it around at home and they'll be still favourites to go through to the semi-finals with that home advantage, it's got to be concerning going forward, isn't it?
A huge concern, I think, because you said, you're right, this game tonight reminded us a lot about that first leg last 16 against Salzburg in Austria. And we've seen this in the Bundesliga as well, them going away and not turning up or only for one half and being really disappointing or not taking their chances. They didn't even have any chances tonight. So that's pretty clear. Lewandowski was, like Jan said, completely transparent in that game, which is really concerning again. Like he was also at the weekend where he didn't score, even if Bayern won, it was still 1-1 at halftime and they had to wait until the last 15 minutes to win that game. So I don't know if he's not fully fit, maybe he had a rib injury before the weekend, but it's really worrying and you would expect them to turn things around now next week at home. But even if they do that, It's still very concerning for the semi-final coming up and whoever they face, but it looks quite likely to be Liverpool. And also for the rest of the Bundesliga, even if they're going to be champions, there's no doubt, because the teams behind are either too inconsistent or too bad like Dortmund. But it's still quite concerning even for Nagelsmann. One, to stop conceding goals, because it's a bad habit now. And two, to make them click offensively, because there's still games where, despite all the talent they have and all the options he has, they're still not really clicking with the ball.
And just to add to that, Dan, you will see that Bayern Munich at their best will be one of the favourites in the Champions League. But that is just the first 11, or maybe 12. Shouldn't do that joke with Bayern Munich after they played 12 this weekend. But if it's 12-13 players, today, when they were 1-0 down, when they had to do something, they took out an offensive player, they put on Goretzka, they put on Süle, they put on Rocca. I mean, that is not Champions League trophy material, isn't it? So they're struggling with a depth in their squad. They need to keep the players fit. They need to have them in shape. And they need to have Lewandowski and Müller turn up. They didn't turn up tonight for Bayern Munich.
One of the things that we admire from teams like Bayern Munich is the concept of their mentality. How wherever they go, whether it's at home or away from home, they're going to show up, and this is a team that is going to put a performance together. That you can bet on anything, they're going to show up, and they're going to play. What's really surprising is to see Bayern Munich, as the guys just alluded to, not showing up, not actually putting forth a performance, a professional performance, where there is a plan in place. This is what we come to do. Yes, Villarreal, maybe you have the ball. Maybe you're excited because you're at home. But because we have quality, because we have players, but because we have talent, we're going to knock the ball around and we're going to do the things that we know how to do. Instead, it was a Bayern Munich that got disorganized, that got stretched, that got in all sorts of difficulties in transition when Villarreal then would get the ball in good areas and would attack Bayern Munich. How many times did we see Villarreal with going 2-against-2v3, 3v2, 4v3, where they had numbers up in the attack? And if they pick the right pass or make the right decision, it's more than 1-0. It's 2-0. It's 3-0. Danjuma taking extra touches inside the 18-yard box when there's an opportunity to go ahead and score. Gerard Moreno, we just mentioned. So many opportunities there for Villarreal. And while I want to focus on Villarreal because this is a team that hasn't been all that great in La Liga this season, it is far more surprising to see the inability of Bayern Munich to simply be professional enough to put a performance together in Champions League quarterfinal. Yep. We're not talking...
Big boy time.
Yes. We're not talking about any other competition. We're talking about the main competition, big moment, quarterfinal. Here you go, away from home. We expect you to be professional enough to put together a performance that is worthy of Bayern Munich, and that we have to have this conversation about Bayern Munich. It's embarrassing.
But still favorites, second leg. Where we go, 90%, Jan?
You love your percent, don't you?
Well, for someone like me, I need to keep things simple, and it's a good way of my brain working it out.
No, but before we do the compare that with Salzburg, because Salzburg, of course, got hammered, there is a difference here, because Emery, he is more experienced than Gisler, the coach of Salzburg. He was a bit naive at Allianz. So this is going to be a tough one for Bayern. If he said 20% chance for Chelsea to turn around, Frank said, I would say this is still a 50-50 for me. Wow. So I think that Bayern is there to lose it. But I won't be surprised if Villarreal come up with a great game again, because they look sharp, they look good organized, and they have this passion in the game that is so good to watch.
50-50, Jules?
I don't think so. I think it's more of a 60-40 for Bayern, maybe even 70-30, because, again, they would be at home. It would be a packed stadium for the first time in 2 years for them in the Champions League, more than 2 years now. So you can expect the crowd will be there. And again, it's very rare that we've seen Bayern having a non-game, two games in a row, really. For Nagelsmann to get it so wrong, like, to get it wrong two games in a row. For Lewandowski not to turn up two games in a row. And we go again. And I think they will turn up next week. And they have a big chance to turn it over. But, as we've said, Villarreal are great. They can defend. They're well organized. They can prevent you from getting any sort of spaces and any sort of momentum into a game. So they will have to still be, in consideration for going through. So that's why I think 60-40 is a fair amount.
Jan, we got to let you go. Where are you driving to tonight?
Oh, I'm driving for Salzburg to Munich.
Of course.
Oh.
Why of course are you doing I that? Do.
Because I worked in Salzburg tonight, and tomorrow I have to go to another airport to. Because tomorrow I'm going to watch. I'm going to be a neutral, not neutral, but I'm going to be a normal fan supporting my former club Eintracht Frankfurt playing Barcelona at home, which is a fantastic game for my old boys.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, and that lighting's good. It reminds me of like a party limo yes. I was in once. It's kind of got that vibe.
How do you know that, Dan?
Hey. Thank you, Dan. Eintracht Frankfurt against Barcelona, of course, one of four Europa League quarterfinals tomorrow. They include West Ham against Lyon, Leipzig against Atalanta, and it's Braga against Rangers. Just a reminder then, we'll be looking back at those games on the next edition of ESPN FC and maybe starting to look ahead as well to Manchester City against Liverpool. Be sure to join us. Speaking of Manchester City, of course, it was a 1-0 victory against Atletico Madrid yesterday. Oh. It wasn't particularly pretty to watch, particularly if you're in Steve Nicholls' shoes.
I found the thing embarrassing, to be honest with you. I don't expect a team in the quarterfinals of the Champions League with a manager who's getting paid 20 million and who spent half a billion on his team to play like that. There is nowhere else in the world that a manager would get away playing like that, getting paid 20 million, except for Atletico Madrid. And for so many years, they never won a game and they never won a title and blah, blah, blah. Well, I get that. And I understand you've got to do what you've got to do. But spare me. The manager's on 20 million, you spend half a billion on a team, and you go and produce that and play like that. I'm sorry. That's a joke.
Kevin De Bruyne after the game saying, for the first time, I saw a team playing 5-5-0. Let's get some French perspective on this, shall we? Jules is with us. Frank as well. Frank, I know you weren't particularly impressed by this game because you texted me and told me you turned it off.
Yeah, well, that's not completely untrue. I put it on my phone and I watched it every 10 minutes to see if they were scoring a goal. But it's true that I was bored. I was bored by the non-pace of the game. I would say the tiki-taka of Guardiola again, trying to find a solution where you cannot cross the ball because you don't have any striker tall enough. You don't have a striker at all. And therefore, you try to find a solution against a very defensive but very well organized Atleti team. And when I switched off and I watched Liverpool, Benfica Liverpool, I saw a game of football with craziness, with pace, with indecisions and everything, where, well, it was boring, it was slow, and I didn't want to watch that game. It's not Champions League for me. So I won't agree with what Stevie said. I won't be that harsh on Guardiola. He tried to find a solution. He didn't. But I think he has to stop not playing with a striker. He needs a striker.
Your colleague on your podcast, Jules, would take the contrarian view, saying Atletico Madrid went there. They went toe-to-toe. They've still got a chance to go back in the second leg. Some people who appreciate this style of football. Will you take his tone as well?
I mean, I struggle to believe that Gab actually, you know, says that. But
no, he didn't say it, Jules. But I know Gab. I know what he would do. Just a bit of counter argument because it's Gab.
I think even Gab would not say that. I mean, I agree with Stevie and Frank and everybody else. And Guardiola, when he said that it was prehistoric football. I mean, no one plays like this anymore. And I can give you a list of other teams like Wycombe, like Swindon, who actually went to the Etihad and played more attacking football than Atletico did. That scored a goal even. That had chances, that had shot on target, that had more possession than what Atleti showed us on Tuesday night, which I have to say was embarrassing. I thought at times it was an insult to football. Considering as well the squad that Simone has at his disposal, a squad that surely deserves better tactics, more attacking football than that. If you think about Antoine Griezmann, he spent 60 minutes on the pitch, touched the ball 16 times, never in the city box, seven passes, one of them being the kickoff. I mean, surely if you're Griezmann, what was the fun in that? Why did you actually go and play that game, considering all you did was running and try to defending? Oh, but he recovered the ball four times. So maybe Simone was happy.
Frank, from a defensive perspective, of course, you won the World Cup as a centre-back. Is there any part of you that admires the way in which they handled this game?
Well, in a way, yes, because I think they have no other solution of than doing that. Because I think it's the print of Simeone on that team for more than a decade, and he always did that. He always worked, and fans of Atleti seems to be happy with that. As a defender, yeah, I would be happy, but I, knowing that I could not do more than 0-0, will frustrate me. That's for sure. I want to have a chance to score one or two goals, and I will try to work with my strikers. I will try to cheer them up, but I will feel embarrassed for them. That's for sure.
More from Jules and me putting words into Gab's mouth on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That drops on Thursday. Be sure to check that out. You can download that over on the website or over on Apple Podcasts as well.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Massive result in the Premier League on Wednesday as Burnley came from behind to beat Everton by 3-2, meaning the difference between the two sides is 1 point. Burnley currently sitting in the relegation zone alongside Watford and Norwich City. But I tell you what, Jules, Everton are in real trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, massive trouble. We saw on the table, Burnley are creeping in just behind. I mean, Lampard, 9 league games, 2 wins and 7 defeats. Not even a draw where you just managed to snatch a point or keep a point. And I mean, Sean Dash, I thought, said it well after the game, complete trolling them, saying, oh, what I said at halftime to my boys was, I don't think Everton know how to win games. And that's how they came back in the second half, and Burnley won that game because Everton were always going to be a bit shaky because they haven't won enough under Lampard. I don't think Lampard knows how to handle the situation right now, which is a crisis situation. He's never really been in that position before, and I think this is part of the problem. Tactically, mentally, they're not ready, they're not good physically either, and just nothing is going their way.
Burnley, still favourite, so to go down, Jules.
Yeah, although, I find that a bit surprising because if you look at Everton's runs of fixture between now and the end of the season, I think it's the fourth hardest in the whole of the Premier League. If you look at who they're facing, it's a horrendous run of fixtures, considering they can hardly beat, they cannot beat Burnley, but they can hardly win a game in the last 9 with only those 2 wins. It's a big, big task ahead, because if behind they start winning, and not just Burnley, but also the others, then I think you could imagine the pressure creeping in, even with the fans at Goodison Park and all those big games coming up against teams that are way stronger than Everton, with more confidence, more momentum going into the game as well. You can easily see Everton not being able to win a game between now and the end of the season, which would mean almost certainly to go down, which would be a disaster for the club. I don't buy at all people are saying, oh, maybe it would be a blessing if they go down in the Championship. And they go. I don't think it's a blessing. I think it's a disaster. Wow. You can still rebuild your team by staying up. You don't need to go down for that.
How on earth is that a blessing? Jules, thank you very much. Jules back with us alongside Frank and Ali for extra time. You can always check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bundesliga continues then this weekend. It all starts with Stuttgart taking on Borussia Dortmund live on ESPN+. And then on Saturday, Bayern Munich against Augsburg. And Sunday sees Leipzig take on Hoffenheim. Meanwhile, La Liga this weekend, Sevilla with a chance to close the gap on Real Madrid at the top of the table. They're at home against Granada. And then on Saturday, it's Real Madrid against Getafe. Which Real Madrid will turn up at the moment?
Who knows?
Who knows? Meanwhile, on Sunday, Barcelona away against Levante. All those games live here on Plus. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for watching. Stay tuned, though, as Extra Time is next. Jules is back with us. Frank, hopefully in a bit of a better mood.
I hope so.
Joins us as well. Ali still stays with us as we'll be answering your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Ali with us here in the studio.
What's going on, Frank?
Frank's purposely.
Yes. He's damaged his connection.
Damaged his connection to make sure that he doesn't have to answer questions about Real Madrid beating his precious Chelsea. Julian is with us as well. Have we got Frank back or is he gone? Is it done?
He's had enough.
Nobody's telling me anything? Oh, we're trying to get him back. The first question is for Frank, but the last bit is for Jules, so we'll start with that. Jules, it isn't really a question, it's just a statement. Kareem the Dream.
Oh, hello.
Oh, Kareem the Dream. I mean, what a monster. Incredible. I mean, we've said it already so many times. We've used all the adjectives that we can think of. His age, the fact that he's 34, this is his best season ever. 37 goals in 36 games. I think his expected goals is 27 or 28. So he scored all the goals that you expect him to score and 10 more. 10 more like the second header tonight, for example, against Chelsea. I mean, he's so everything, so intelligent, so handsome, so French, so intelligent. So anything you want, it's just perfect.
What's bad mood in French, Jules? Is it mal humeur? Is that it?
Oh, hello.
I can't remember. No, I don't.
Mauvaise humeur.
As we welcome Frank Leboeuf back.
There he is.
I'm never in a bad mood. I'm always, happy in my life. You know why that's crazy? During the game, my wife came twice and said, Frank, what's wrong with you? I never seen you like that. I was insulting all the Chelsea players. I was insulting even the referee when he gave, when he stopped the game, when Valverde got a cramp and he stopped the game and didn't allow Chelsea to finish the action. I was hating that French referee. Well, I was in a bad mood. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
but I'm
know.
Not it's anymore. Quite... I'm happy to be with you guys.
We called. I gave Frank a couple of calls during the game.
I know.
Just to say hello.
Yeah, just to let him know. And it seemed like his signal was a little delayed.
Yeah.
We were seeing things before he was.
I know. He was saying some very rude things to me.
Yeah, no, we have to say what happened. You know, Dan and Ali were calling me. You have to know that, Jules. They were calling me, saying, and just, on the video, to make sure I see them very happy, big fan of Real Madrid, when Real Madrid were scoring goals. And I had like a 30 seconds or 1 minute delay, though I didn't know there was a goal. And when he called me for a second, I said, no, don't tell me there is a second one. I mean, that's crazy. They were so, and they didn't call me when Havertz scored the goal. They didn't call me, so I had to call them.
Yes, so bad.
I didn't call you when Benzema got his hat trick because I thought, he's had enough.
Yes.
He's had enough.
Let him find out on his own.
To the first question, we obviously just did Kareem the Dream for Jules, but how is Frank? He's been against Real Madrid forever. Against PSG, didn't even give them credit, and now his previous club getting battered in a big Champions League night. We know the tie's not over, but yay.
I almost signed for Real Madrid. I was a big fan of Real Madrid at the time, and I have nothing against Real Madrid whatsoever. I love the club. I love Karim Benzema. I was cheering Ramos when Stevie was criticizing him. I was very happy to see that those players and that team winning four times the Champions League. So I have nothing against Real Madrid. I'm just saying what I see. That's it. And again, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of PSG. I was a captain of Marseille. I'm not a fan of Real Madrid. I'm not even a fan of Chelsea. When I have to criticize Chelsea, I do so because it's my job. So, Winger...
You are a fan of Chelsea. It's okay to be... You are a fan of Chelsea. That's okay to say.
No. I appreciate Chelsea. It was my club. Like, I followed Marseille, Strasbourg and Laval. But I'm not a fan. I'm not... I'm blinded by love. I'm not blinded by love of Chelsea.
Not necessarily.
Yes, they are. Don't tell me stories about that. You know, they don't want to see. You know, when you talk about Ronaldo or the fan of Ronaldo, if you say something, a little bit something bad, you hate Ronaldo. And you say it. You love to say it. When I say something bad about somebody else, oh, you hate Neymar. Oh, you hate Ronaldo. Oh, you hate Real Madrid. No, I just talk about football.
Yeah, but you do hate Neymar.
Okay, that's next question.
I don't know that he's best changed.
No, Frank's on the edge. This is going to be fun. Jules, is Benzema as appreciated in France as much as you appreciate him?
No.
I think it's getting there. I think for a long time, also because he was not playing for the national team anymore, people were still underestimating him, maybe, or undervaluing him. I think this is maybe the better word, undervaluing him, even with all the trophies that he won at Real Madrid, because also he was Cristiano's team and not his team. Now that it's his team, now that he's back with the national team, having that partnership with Kylian Mbappe up front, I think there's far more appreciation in France for him than there ever was. I mean, the sex tape story, I think, sort of tarnished a little bit his image as well, and his reputation, if you want. And I think there was a time where people didn't see him for the talented player that he was even back then. Now, I mean, he's on another level anyway, so you can only appreciate him, especially if you're French and especially if you're going to the World Cup with the two best players in the world right now.
God, Jules, imagine if he was English, how excited we'd all be about him. It'd be nuts. It would be bonkers, wouldn't it?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. It would be.
Ali, to the team, if you were heading into the Champions League final and had to choose between Lewandowski and Benzema, who would you pick?
Right now.
Are you kidding me?
After we've seen what we saw today, Karim the Dream.
Yeah.
As do we Karim Benzema. He is, and I've said it I don't know how many times in this show, 100 times over, he is the most important player for Carlo Ancelotti and Real Madrid. When he's on the field, they are a different team. And if you had any question or any doubt as to what the value of Karim Benzema is for Real Madrid, just take him off the field and see what that team becomes. It is an amazing transformation as to how that team runs out of ideas when Benzema is not on the field. He is the definition of an MVP, most valuable player.
Frank, if he wins the Ballon d'Or, will you give it more credence because he's French?
Well, I don't give credit to people because they win a Ballon d'Or, because I don't give a stuff about the Ballon d'Or. But I will give credit to Karim Benzema because he's definitely, if he's not the best striker in the world, he will have to share it with Kylian Mbappe. I mean, the guy is... you know what? I asked people to watch the third goal. Yes, it's a mistake between Mendy and Rüdiger. But what Benzema does... with a sprint of 50 meters to chase Mendy and then to chase Rüdiger is absolutely fantastic. Professionally talking, that guy gives everything to his club. He deserves all the credit. The Ballon d'Or, if he wants him, I give him 10 Ballon d'Ors, no problem.
What do you reckon, Jules? Ballon d'Or, two-horse race, Mbappe against Benzema?
Well, there's still Mo Salah, for example, who's having, well, not so much right now, but for a long time.
He didn't win the Africa Cup of Nations,
in the Premier League as well.
That's going to tar him.
I know, but he can still win the Champions League and the Premier League and the quadruple. If Liverpool win the quadruple with Salah at his best, he will be very much in the running with Mbappe and Benzema. But you have to say right now, there's no one more impressive than Mbappe and Benzema. And because Benzema is still in the Champions League and Kylian isn't, I think that plays a big part, and that's weighed even more in the running. And because now it's over the season and not the calendar year, I think this season will be key. And of course, I think Benzema has to right now be the front runner. And it's not just for now, it's also for the 2021 season, you know, the start of the season as well.
The World Cup doesn't count, Jules. No, the World Cup doesn't count this time.
Yeah. No, I think it will be for the next season, if you want. So that will be part of the following season.
Yeah, then, no, yeah, so that comes.
Are you suggesting that you said something incorrect?
I'm backtracking now very much with my statement.
Because so you were sort of taking this conversation down a path.
My path was France favourites to win the World Cup.
Right.
What if they do? Uh-huh. Then it's Mbappe or Benzema, given that their performances domestically. Okay. Salah, I wasn't including the conversation because obviously what happened in the African Cup of Nations. However, if it's just for this season, and as Jules quite rightly said in quite a polite way, could have been rude to me.
Yeah.
If Liverpool win the quadruple, then Salah, I think, very much the conversation.
I can fairly assess the following. I think that Frank, if you had asked him the question in the mood that he's in today, he would have been rude to you. So good decision on your part of going to Jules.
Yeah, there you are.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, Ali, I'm going to be very rude to him. Stop being optimistic about France's chances in World Cup, because you did the same a year ago about the Euro, and you cursed us. You cursed us. So,
my
be quiet.
Fault.
Shut up.
You're the problem.
Yeah, don't talk about Mbappe and Benzema.
Yeah, of course it's your fault. Nothing to do with Mother Rabiot and everything going on in the stands.
No. Because of you. Only because of you.
Oh, we had some nice meals out during the Euros, didn't we, Frank? That was beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Very nice.
Oh, yeah. You had sandals on.
Oh, good times. Yeah. Good times. Shorts.
And shorts.
I don't wear sandals.
No, I see you in your...
They're chanclers. They're flip-flops. They're not sandals. You think sandals, you think white socks.
Flip-flops, then.
Yeah.
And your shorts. And
beautiful legs.
Hairy legs.
Oh,
what a shame. What a shame. With these hairy legs.
Is Bayern losing to Villarreal, Jules, a bigger upset than Chelsea losing to Real Madrid? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, massively. I think with the Real Madrid-Chelsea tie, we were maybe 60-40 Chelsea, maybe even 50-50 for some of us. With the Bayern-Villarreal, with the second leg in Munich, we were all like, okay, this is a bit of a Benfica-Liverpool kind of tie where you've got one huge favourite. And of course, on one game, an upset can happen like we saw tonight, but over the two games, surely the bigger team will go through and prevail. Now we'll have to wait and see if Bayern can turn this one around. But no, it would be a huge upset if they were to be knocked out by Villarreal in the quarterfinals in that way.
Here we go. Which hat-trick was better, Ali? Benzema against Chelsea or Ronaldo against Manchester United 2003? That was the game at Old Trafford, wasn't it?
You know I have a soft spot for Ronaldo.
Yeah. But didn't he get a standing ovation from the United fans for that as well?
Today was impressive from Benzema, but when you put Ronaldo in the conversation, then it's game, set, match, game over, I'm taking Ronaldo.
Yeah.
The original one. The original Ronaldo.
That wasn't the Redondo assist one, was it? That was before.
Yeah.
That was before, was it?
Phenomenal.
Yeah. The Redondo assist?
Yeah, it was there.
Was that game?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was.
I think so, yeah.
The left-hand side, sideline. But then...
If you haven't seen that, just
YouTube,
Redondo assist.
You know what? After picking Ronaldo, Ali, you know what Dan would say to you? You hate Benzema. It's why you pick Ronaldo.
No, I think Ali put together a nice, flawed argument. And we know that you love Ronaldo, given obviously he didn't turn up in the World Cup final and you took all the credit for it and made a living from that. So it's perfect.
All right. Oh, my God. Whatever. Whatever.
Don't listen to him, Frank. Don't listen to him.
I know. Well, I never did, and I will never do.
Ali, would Real Madrid with Benzema smash this Barcelona side? Didn't play in El Clasico, obviously. Real Madrid lose 4-0.
What? I assume the game would be different than what it was, but the issues for Real Madrid in that game weren't just the absence of Benzema. They just got outplayed. And defensively, they were all over the place and they were disconnected and disorganized. And Barcelona were really, really good. It was 4-0, and it should have been 8-0. That's how many chances Barcelona created, clear opportunities. He would have made a difference, but I don't think it would have changed the result in terms of Barcelona winning.
Juric, Karius, Donnarumma, and now Mendy. Frank, how does Benzema force mistakes from goalkeepers?
Well, I think there is an incident when they see Benzema coming. I guess goalkeepers start to be scared, you know. And the cleverness of Benzema, I talked about that, you know. He pushed a little bit Donnarumma. He forced Mendy to maybe give the ball to Rüdiger and then chase Rüdiger. I think it's not randomly that it happened twice in the Champions League with Benzema in the middle of it. It's because his talent and his feeling worked very well.
Please rate all three headers, the two Karim Benzema headers and the Havertz header, in descending order. Go on, Jules.
That's pretty easy, I think. Havertz has to be number three. Then I think the first Benzema's header has to be second. It's an amazing header from where the cross from Vinicius is coming and how he sort of smashes it in the, it's a very powerful header. But the second one really has to be top here, because it's just the jump and to guide the ball the way he does by using the pace of the Modric cross in the other direction, where I think, I'm not sure that's where Mendy expects the ball to go. Just imagine the abs and the muscles here of his core to be able to do that. It's an incredible header. And I think both Karim's header, I think the expected goals on either of them is really, really low actually. But the second one is even lower than the first one. So I'll have to go first one with that one, and then the second one, and then Havertz is number three.
Final question. It's away from Real Madrid, actually, and Benzema, which has dominated, as you would expect, the conversation. Should Frank Lampard read Frank's book?
Well, we've talked about this.
Well, I would say that if he carries on, you know, losing games like that, he might go into depression, and then I will send him the book. But
there you
I will
go.
Still give him some...
To Frank, love Frank. That is it, we're done.
Of course.
Thank you very much, Frank LaBeouf. Wonderful to have you on.
That beautiful smile.
Yeah. A pleasure. Uh-huh. Always a pleasure, guy.
Who do you hate more, me or Neymar?
Definitely you. Definitely you. Yeah.
I'm off. I'm off tomorrow. It'll be all right. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Because I know you, I don't know Neymar, and I know you're a bad person, so it's why.
You and your shorts.
Man. Frank might be, I don't know, he's back tomorrow. Don't care.
I am. I'm on.
Yeah. Stand by.